You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 30 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the Carling Cup triumph over Aston Villa. We'll be previewing Wolves away as the Reds look to maintain their title charge. And Musk chief executive Duncan Drasto joins us on the line to talk all things green and gold.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 30 now of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and I'm joined by Dan and Dov this week as he's back from his holiday. How was it in Hong Kong, Dov?
Hong Kong was good. China, not so good. If anybody wants to go to China, please go. But take a Mandarin Facebook with you, because getting around China without any language skills whatsoever, apart from English, doesn't really get you anywhere. And always keep your wallet where you can see it as well. That's all I'm going to say. Don't eat plain food on the way home, because that's not good for you either.
You managed to catch the Milan game, I believe, at quite an early time in the morning.
Yes, 4 o'clock in the morning. Walking through a street full of strip bars to find the only pub in Hong Kong that was actually showing the game that I could find anyway, 5 minutes before kickoff, so I was quite lucky, but I managed it just.
Your dedication astounds me. I mean, walking past, you know, tens of, like, you know, strip bars and you just wanted to watch United.
Exactly.
What's the quality of women like in China? Because you must have been too impressed.
I wasn't too impressed at all. I mean,
and how are you this week, Dan?
I'm fine, thanks, Steve. I'm doing well. Watched the game on Sunday, pretty decent performance second half, so yeah, well happy. Obviously hearing about Dov's escapades in Hong Kong, it's fantastic news, going back with a bit of sickness as well. Don't know how you can do that on a holiday, but there you are.
Well, Dan, I was eating plane food. I had some dodgy aeroplane food on the way back, and I've spent the last day or so on the toilet, which is...
Sure, all our listeners are dying to hear that.
Well, I need to let everybody know that, like, obviously, that my previous advice should also carry through for everybody. So don't eat plain food if you can get away with it.
Well, we'll kick off, guys, by reviewing the League Cup final win over Aston Villa, which Dan just mentioned, 2-1. Dan came out on top in the end, didn't we? But might have been very different if one the Manja Vidic had been shown a red card, and he definitely deserved to walk, didn't he?
He probably did mean, you know, should have had a red card, but the referee showed a bit of common sense and kept him on the pitch, really. I thought he was a bit stupid, really, going in, diving into a tackle when Agbonlahor lost control of it, didn't he, a little bit. Vidic got virtually goal side, so I think he was stupid to dive in. He does that quite a lot. He does it outside the box, gives away stupid free kicks a lot, but I mean, he's a good player.
Don't you just love how Vidic, when he goes down, he tries to claim a free kick himself. His sort of arm.
Yeah, yeah, there was no way that was anything other than a foul. And it's I don't know why he does that, really. It makes himself a bit look like a fool. That's fair enough. I suppose you'd do it if you were him in that situation. But I mean, Martin O'Neill's banging on about, oh, if we'd have played against 10 men and all this lot. What happened at Villa Park? We were down to 10 men for the majority of the game, and Villa didn't even create any chances against us. So, you know, I don't think it necessarily... It would have had an impact on the game, but it would have meant that United, I think, would have obviously kept hold of the ball a little bit more, knowing that they've got a man less. I mean, it depends how it pans out, but... You know, I thought that Villa played all right first half, especially the first 20 minutes when they got at us. But I think we had the strength, didn't we, to overcome it.
And Dov, I want to ask you about one Dimitar Berbatov. He looks a changed man, doesn't he? He was absolutely superb and arguably his best performance in the United shirt yet.
Yeah, he really got himself up for the game. I'm going to confess to not have seen the game live because I was on an aeroplane, but I have watched extended highlights and he looked fantastic. Although, I don't really know what to say about Berbatov other than this is probably his one good performance for the next 10 weeks.
Dan, you're surely going to jump to his...
Give the guy some credit. Come on, last three games he's been pretty decent for us. You know, he's been involved in the majority of the goals with Rooney and Valencia. What more do you want from him? You know, I don't understand you sometimes. I just don't get it.
He's
playing well. He's playing well.
All I've seen was a few good flicks and tricks and things.
Over. Are you having all that right? You didn't see the games before then, did you?
No, because I've been away. I'm not... Honestly...
Right, well, then you can't comment then, can you? Right, he's been brilliant the last three games. Honestly, he has.
And you're looking through Berbatov tinted glasses.
I'm not at all, honestly. You know, and even in the final, he looked like he was actually trying hard and putting tackles in. I mean, the goal, for instance, you know, he hassled Richard Dunn, and I don't think Dunn expected it, and he was putting his foot in and stuff. He won the ball off him. Didn't show unbelievable pace, I agree with you, but, you know, he made the defender make a mistake. Give the guy some credit.
I'm giving him a lot. I did say he had a decent game. I've seen little bits and pieces that it looked all right. It looked like a nice few tricks and flicks I've seen, but I'm not a fan of his, Dan. He's really like...
I'll always fall on the
other side of the fence and criticise him regardless, because that's the kind of person that I am.
I think he's finally starting to pull his socks up now. I think he's seen how well Rooney's doing, and I think he's taken it on board that he needs to start delivering, and he did on Sunday, to be fair. So let's hope it continues. But Dan, what about the...
Sorry, Dan?
I'm just going to carry on with that point. Like, I think he's... You know, realise that Michael Owen's actually doing well in training and stuff, and when he comes on, he's scoring goals, and he's thinking, actually, I better start, you know, moving up a gear here, also I'm not going to get in the team.
Yeah.
I think that's a valid point. I think Owen's been pretty good last few games as well.
Do you not think it's more the part the midfielders are doing so well? I mean, you've got Valencia, who's fantastic. Nani's sort of pulled his socks up, and Rooney's shown that he can play on his own up front as well. And do you think, like, it doesn't leave much room to put Berbatov in? So do you think that obviously that would add to the point where it's like everybody else, sort of attacking wise, is really sort of coming into form, working hard, playing well, and not giving him a chance? Because, I mean, he's not been injured or anything. He's been left at the team because he's not playing well. So,
well, I think he's been carrying a bit of a knee injury, but I mean, he's still able to play. Like you say, you know, he's available for selection. And yeah, I suppose you are right. You know, if all the other attacking players are playing well, he's not going to get in the team, is he? Especially if we do play 4-5-1, like you've just said as well. So it's hard to fit him into a team where you're playing 4-5-1, because obviously Rooney's going to be your main focal point, isn't he? Unless you put Rooney on the left, but then you eliminate his effectiveness, don't you, I suppose. So yeah, it is hard, but I mean, I still maintain every week I'll say he'll be a big player for us this season, and I think he'll score a lot of important goals.
I don't know.
Head on the line.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I think he's on his last legs of being one of these expensive flops that Alex Ferguson likes to buy.
And what about the Valencia-Rooney combination, Dan? Worked a devastating effect, didn't it, once again? And they just look like they're telepathic at the moment, don't they?
It does, yeah. And I'm going to mention again, Berbatov, he's been the one who's passed it to Valencia, you know, if you want to make it a trio. I mean, I suppose we're getting a bit too far now.
Don't want to make it a trio, Dan.
Oh, well, I think we should. Anyway, no, Berbatov, I mean, he's been playing well in Valencia as well. You know, they do seem to have a good sort of partnership, really. But I'm just worried it's going to get a little bit predictable, because the last few games we've done that every time. We've passed it down the right-hand side. Got Valencia into decent positions, and you know, Rooney's always been unmarked, really, which is a surprise. Valencia's crossing's been top notch lately. I like the way that he can vary his crosses as well. He can float them like we saw on Sunday, or he can drill them, or he can, you know, put a bit of pace and bend on them. I think he's a really good player. He's been one of our best players this season by far. Him and Evra, and obviously Rooney.
So unfortunate for Michael Owen, Dov. I mean, coming back into the side, scoring a goal, looking like he's really up for it, and then there goes the hamstring, was it, I think, and it's a game over for him.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was good to see him get a start at least, and obviously got his goal as well, so at least they made an impact on the game, actually had a contribution to make as well. I think I read something, he said that he's not missed a training session or something like that since he's came to United. So, I mean, actually, like, any questions over his fitness are sort of answered there as such. So, it depends. I don't know how long he's out for, but I wouldn't expect it to be too long. I think he'll be back sort of knocking on the door as he has been all season. But I've been also reading things where it looks like he's going to get sold in the summer and things like that. So, I don't know where his future lies. I think he's maybe got a bit more to contribute than what he has done so far this season. But I would like to see him give him a bit more chances as well.
James Milner, Dan, I've been really impressed with him sort of last couple of months. Obviously, he's excelled, and he's now in the England team, but on Sunday again I thought he was one of the better Villa players on the pitch, and I think he looks top four material. He looks like he could be a well, if United fancied it, he could be a decent acquisition for us.
No, he's a very good player. Started his career at Leeds, didn't he? You know, he was decent then, even at a young age. And he's took his time to work his way into the England squad. But I mean, he can play in a variety of positions. He can play left midfield, I think. He can play right midfield. He can play in the middle, as he's proved the last few games. I was surprised though on Sunday that United didn't really pick him up much. He was on his own a lot of the time, and I was surprised at that. Fletcher didn't really get close to him. Whether that was a tactic just to let him, you know, have a bit of space or whatnot, I'm not sure. But I think that he's a decent player. Yeah, I'm not convinced whether he's United class just yet, but he's definitely on his way there, isn't he?
And well, massive news to come out of Old Trafford recently, guys. Over the last sort of few days or so, Red Knights. Been splashed all over the headlines in the newspapers and all over the television and internet. They're supposedly a group of 50 or so wealthy Manchester United supporters apparently looking to take over United from the Glazer family. Firstly, guys, what's your sort of thoughts on that? Do you think it could potentially happen?
Personally, I don't think it'll happen. One, I don't think the Glazers will sell. Put the club into what? So they were £700 million in debt. I think they paid nearly £300 million of their own money to get control of the club as well. So, I mean, they've said that they're in it for the money and they want to make money out of the club. So I think they'll be looking to probably double what they put in, and obviously anything they would have to cover the debt. So I think you're talking at least maybe £1.5 billion to get them to listen to anybody as well, because like, they don't have to listen to anything the Red Knights bring to the table. Another thing that sort of worries me slightly about it, I mean, I know a lot of fans have been, well, anything's better than the Glazers, but if you bring, say, 40 or 50 people who are big investors to the club, I mean, United, as much as anybody doesn't like the Glazers, they're a well-run club, and if you bring 40, 50 people with different interests, obviously they're all investors, so they might want to return on their investment, exit strategies, things like that, the way the club's run could change, and that could be for the worse. I mean, like, nobody knows that. Well, too many questions at the minute for me to properly give them my backing. Let's just say that. I mean, Dan, what do you think about it?
I kind of agree with you, you know, in the fact that if there are so many people who want to get on board and want to take over the club, there's going to be conflicts within those 50 people. The Glazers, obviously, there's only a handful of them, and they'll all obviously get together and decide what's best for the club or what's best for them, whichever way you look at it. But, you know, we've been... The tricky thing is that we've been doing well on the pitch, but I think it only becomes a massive problem, all the debt that we're in, is if we, you know, drop out of the top four, which it could conceivably happen in the next few years. I'm not writing that off, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's where we could get into a bit of trouble. But I mean, at the moment, if we keep winning, if we win the league this year, and you know, we've already won the Carling Cup, it'll be a pretty successful season. So I don't know where to stand, really. It'd be a lot easier to make a decision and a choice if we were where Liverpool are at the moment, you know, struggling to get in the top four, and there's a, you know, possibility they're not going to get there. So I mean, it's hard to judge. One thing I will say is that I don't think the Glazers will sell unless there's a lot of money being offered on the table, like you say, that they want to make money out of the club.
Yeah.
Which I think everyone knew really from the outset. You know, you'd have to be a bit naive not to know that once they've put so much money into it themselves.
And with all things considered, if the takeover did happen and the money was up front and the debts were wiped out, I mean, surely control from supporters would be a better scenario than being controlled by people in America that don't really have too much interest in the club or football in general.
Yeah. But what the thing is with the Glazers, I mean, when they're in the control of the club, aren't they? But they don't take any, you know, they don't get involved with team affairs or anything like that. Who's to say that these 50 supporters aren't going to want to decide who plays for the club and stuff like that? You never know how it's going to turn out. They need to lay down on the table what they want to do with the club, really, before you can make any sort of assumptions.
Well, here's one thing. Talking about supporter takeovers and things like that, I mean, like, if you look at sort of supporter takeovers such as Exeter City, York City, they've been taken over by fans, but they don't really make it work. At one point, I think Notts County were supporter-owned, and they then handed the club back to, obviously, the people that took them over privately. Look at clubs in Spain, like Valencia, Real Madrid, Barcelona, who are all supporter owned in a sense. I mean, they've all had financial problems in the past. So I mean, if you think you have supporters who make it better, then, or they might have the best interest of the club at heart, but they might not be able to run the club in the correct manner, which could lead to,
well, to be fair, the Red Knights, those guys, they seem to have a good financial background, don't they? You know, which is always helpful. But in terms of, I mean, they're meant to be diehard United fans and all this sort of, which they probably are, so they wouldn't be putting so much, well, bidding to put so much money into it. But I'm just going back to the point about supporters and team affairs. You know, that's what fans are. They all have different opinions on the game. Like, you don't like Berbatov, I do. You know, so what happens if, you know, times that by 50? Who wants who? And transfers, who's going to be in charge of the transfers? Who's going to put money in for that?
Well, I mean,
I don't know. It's just, yeah. I know. Well, the club make a lot of money independently, don't they, through merchandise and whatnot.
So yeah, it just depends what, like, how you look at it. I mean, if the Rednecks come in and basically keep the club as is, whereas, like, basically having them as direct replacements for the Glazers with a different financial structure, most people would quite accept that, because if the club's well run, management structure's there with Alex Ferguson and such, like, so if it stays like that, then I wouldn't have any problems. But if they come in and then try and restructure sort of the hierarchy of the club and want to have more say and things like that, then I don't know if that would be in the best interests.
Okay, well, let's bring someone else into the equation. I'm delighted to say that we're being joined this evening by Must Chief Executive Duncan Drasdo. Duncan, thanks a lot for coming on the show, first of all.
Hi, Stephen. Delighted to join you. Thank you.
Obviously, a lot of activity at the moment with the Green and Gold campaign and the potential takeover of the Red Knights too. But let's talk about the Manchester United Supporters Trust to begin with. And basically, for any of our listeners who are a bit oblivious to Must and what you're all about, can you sort of enlighten us on what the organisation stands for?
Yeah, I mean, we started as a United shareholder organisation, really, and following the B Sky B bid back in 1998-99, we started to promote the idea of supporter share ownership, because we thought it's a good idea to have the people who own the club or own the shares in the club and the supporters being one and the same people, because it removes the possible problem of a conflict of interest between owners and supporters. And, you know, I think that was a reasonably successful period doing that under the PLC, but obviously not enough people did that in order to prevent a takeover in 2005. And so from that point onwards, we were really looking at an opportunity to get a friendly takeover of United, where supporters would once again have an opportunity to own a stake in their club.
Fantastic stuff. And the Green and Gold campaign, Duncan, obviously massive at the moment. Big presence on Sunday at the Carling Cup final. Where did this all first stem from, sort of the idea behind the Green and Gold campaign, and how did you initially go about spreading the word?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of idea of using it as almost a symbol of opposition to the current ownership did actually start back in 2005. You know, it was suggested then, certainly, but it never took off. And I think it was Chatmaster on Red Issue who was the one who really came up with the idea at the time of the bond issue and suggested it as a way of people signalling discontent. And we saw that idea and thought it was just a fantastic idea, a symbolic way that sort of connected back to Newton Heath and a sort of purity of supporting the football club. And so what we did, obviously, was promoted it through our membership and then also started to buy in the scarves and sell them at cost on match day in order to, you know, sort of seed the idea and get it spreading as a kind of idea virus. And it went out there and grew virally, and, you know, it's really gone sort of mainstream now and created a lot of interest. What I particularly liked about the idea was that it was so visual that when people saw it, if they didn't know what it was or why people were wearing these colour scarves, then they were immediately thinking about going up and asking someone, why are you wearing that scarf? And so, of course, it was a great way to create conversations between supporters who wouldn't have been talking about it otherwise. So very, very powerful in that respect. And I should say, I mean, I know there are plenty of supporters who would prefer to wear red, black and white, and, you know, that's absolutely fine as well. I don't think anybody should be feeling that somebody's trying to tell them what to do. You know, it's just a purely matter of choice, and those people who would like to do it, great, and those who don't, that's fine too.
Well, it's certainly taken off, and at the beginning, did you really see it developing as well as it has? And are there sort of any plans in place to try and develop it even further?
Well, yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think we did see that it was a very good chance that it would grow like that. I mean, that's exactly why we kind of tried to, you know, push the idea out there so hard right at the start. And, you know, you never know exactly how far it's going to go, but you know that, you know, it was immediately obvious to me, certainly, and the other people I talked to, that it was such a great idea that, you know, we knew that we needed to, we needed to kind of back it and push it out there. Where it develops from here, I don't know. I mean, that's probably harder to say because obviously there's a point at which it reaches a plateau, certainly in the match going support. But I think what will be interesting is that it's spreading that kind of message visually out from the match going support through the TV pictures and discussions and photographs and things that are passed around the world to people all around the world, you know, United supporters everywhere. And we know we've had, you know, people ordering scarves from us from branches all around the world. So obviously there's an appetite to you know, sort of connect with the same idea in everywhere around the world.
I don't know how much of this you'll be able to tell us, but you were at the meeting with the Red Knights earlier in the week. Could you tell us what sort of things were brought up and tell us a bit more about the people that could potentially be involved in this potential takeover?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult to talk about that. I mean, partly because we have spoken in the press since then, but what we've said is that we can speak on behalf of the Supporters Trust because at the meeting it was agreed we'd appoint a PR firm who would represent the sort of Red Knight group. And so I don't want to kind of break the agreement in that respect. And obviously it was a private meeting. But, you know, in broad terms, I can certainly say obviously it was about exploring, you know, what are the ways to raise the finance and make the appropriate offer. You know, it's a feasibility study to a large extent because there isn't a absolutely set in stone plan here. This is, you know, looking at the different options, and the reason that we're still looking at the different options is we don't know at this stage how many supporters would be interested in participating, and we don't know to what level they would participate. You know, in my view, the ideal situation is that, you know, that you don't actually even need the Red Knights in one sense, because supporters will put enough money in in a very much a mass participation that you get, you know, you can raise the finance to buy the club like that. But the great thing about having, a group of very wealthy individuals who are obviously passionate United fans is that they can kind of give you that cornerstone that gives people confidence that, yeah, we can actually raise the finance to do this. And that's what you need to get to that critical mass so that supporters say, OK, this is something that's worth doing. Because in a sense, we've been saying this is a supporters trust for the entire five-year period. But we've always known that people will only really come on board when they start to see, you know, that this is very credible and imminent. And that's always the way with any kind of project where you're trying to involve large numbers of people. You get to a critical mass and then suddenly everyone goes, wow, this actually might happen. You know, I think there's been a desire amongst United supporters, not just, you know, in a negative sense to say we don't want the Glazers or we want a change of ownership, but in a positive way to say, well, we want the best possible ownership model for United. And not just that, we love the idea of owning a stake in the club ourselves, because I think that, you know, gives you a special connection with the football club. You know, when you're actually not just a supporter, but you're also a part owner in the club, you know, that's like almost the ultimate relationship to me. And that's why I've always felt I wanted to be, you know, a shareholder in the club myself.
Well, initially, the Red Knights and yourselves, you appealed for 100,000 fans to sign up with Must. And at the time of recording this interview, I think we're at around 99,000 now, so congratulations on that firstly. And what comes next now you've sort of, well, it looks like you're definitely going to surpass that target.
Yeah, I mean, obviously what we wanted to do was try to set a target. I mean, and I don't think the Red Knights press release actually puts a number in there. That was the number that we set. Obviously what we were trying to do was set a target that was definitely ambitious, but that we thought we could achieve. But, you know, with anything like this, you just don't know how it's going to go until you try to do it. And, you know, it certainly, you know, we're getting close to there as we speak. And, you know, that's beyond our expectations, I guess. I think really then trying to, you know, make an assessment about, well, what's the next level? Because certainly we want to grow larger and larger numbers. But obviously there's a point at which you also want to use that, if you like, that database, that connection that we've got, that network of United fans all around the world, and actually start to say, well, okay, then, if we get an opportunity, what sort of model would you like to see? You know, what would you like it? You know, what's your ideal structure for Manchester United? What are the things that you'd like to see at United that we might be able to change if we're successful with this? And, you know, in that situation, if you were going to put some money in to buy some shares, how much would you be prepared to put in? Or if it was going to be over a period of time and you put in a certain amount a month or a year, you know, so it's looking at all the opportunities, and really that's why the growth of the kind of the e-membership or the, you know, the email campaign is so important, because it gives us that connection with a large number of United supporters to be able to start to explore, you know, what can we do with this, how many people would participate, and to what level, and then you can start to plan, well, what is it we need to make the plan work in addition to this large mass of supporters that obviously is, you know, to me is the most important part.
And just looking ahead, Duncan, I mean, if the Red Knights did achieve their aim of taking over the club, just sort of loosely, what can we expect to be drastically different in terms of the way the club is currently run?
Well, I think, you know, to guarantee that, then it requires that us as supporters actually take this opportunity. I think what we're being offered is an opportunity to take some ownership in the club. And so really it's about, well, if we want to see certain things in the club, if we want to see the club change and the club become more focused on, you know, reinvesting money into the football team or into the stadium, or keeping ticket prices reasonable, or looking at things like safe standing, you know, all the kind of issues that affect especially match game fans, but obviously fans around the world care about whether the money's being reinvested in the team and these sort of issues, then we've got a much better chance of doing that if we are owners of the club. You know, we have a voice to an extent, and clearly we're not talking about, you know, the supporters running the club or the supporters having an influence on the everyday management of the club. You're still looking at having an executive board who operate the club like any business, and they have to be, you know, driving it in a commercial way to generate the revenues that you need to produce a competitive football club. But I think the clear thing is, it's, you know, really important thing is that, what do you do with the profits? You know, do you siphon those off into a bank account in Tampa or wherever, or do they get reinvested into the club? And I think supporters obviously would most likely have the you know, the priority of reinvesting in the team and the facilities and other aspects of the football club.
Just sort of for any fans that maybe still a little bit unsure, heard all about all this money sort of flying around that could potentially oust the Glazers. I mean, what do you say to fans that are still a bit worried about maybe there's some false promises being offered, and that this still worried that this might not take off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think there's really false promises, because we're not promising anything at this stage. I mean, what we're saying is this is an opportunity, and you as supporters have got to grab it. And it doesn't mean, you know, at this stage we're not saying any particular model or any particular thing's going to happen. And by signing up to the, you know, to join Must on the website, you're not saying I'm committed, I support the Red Knights, or I support what's going to happen, because nobody has to commit to anything until we see what the plans are going to be exactly. And so it's all you're really doing is saying, I want to be part of the opportunity. I want to be given information about how things are going to develop, and I want to influence it as well, because we're going to be asking questions of people. What do they want? How do they want to see this proceed? And so I don't think there's a, you know, there's any reason to have any kind of fear or anxiety about this, because there's no commitment, and actually there's an opportunity, really, and there's an opportunity to, you know, to direct the way that this Red Knight group develops. And, you know, if you don't take the opportunity to be involved in it, then you can't really complain if it doesn't turn out the way you like.
And you've already mentioned quite a few things before, but what sort of will the Red Knights need from supporters to sort of take the takeover bid even further? I mean, will you expect fans to start boycotting matches? I know there were suggestions about that, but nothing's been sort of concretely added.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect supporters to do that, certainly. But, I mean, you know, I think clearly if you've got a bid on the table, and it's a good offer, and you've got a mass of supporters behind it, and it's something that's going to be in the best interest of the football club. Clearly, it's going to mean that there's going to be money reinvested in the club, and everyone can see that it's much better for the football club and the supporters than the current ownership model. Then I'm sure that people will look at that, and they'll be able to make their decision based on, you know, that information. And it may be they say, well, okay, then if we want to persuade the owners to sell, then, you know, by not renewing my season ticket, or by saying, OK, I'll delay renewing it until July, or I'll switch to only going on a match-by-match basis, or, you know, there's all variety of different things people might choose to do. But what we're very clear about is that we never agree with the idea that the supporters' trust itself should try and tell people what to do. I think you can give people information, but I think if you try and tell people what to do, you often build up resentment, and actually you're probably more likely to get people who will you know, resist what you're trying to tell them rather than go along with it. I think, you know, United fans are very much independent thinkers and, you know, enjoy making a strong statement that we don't get pushed around by anyone. So, you know, it's about giving information and people making decisions. And something like that is a very much an emotional decision, I think, and people have got to make that for themselves. So I think it's laying out the information and letting people make decisions. But clearly it makes it a lot easier if you can see that there's a, you know, a fantastic future for United if you go down one route, and there's the kind of the negative situation in terms of money leaking out of the club year after year going down the other route. So I think that's really it, really. It's a personal decision based on, information.
Sure. And, I mean, how will the Red Knights, do you think, how are they going to go about convincing the Glazers to sell? I mean, there's David Gill coming out today saying that there's no way they're going to sell. But if they ever did consider it, I mean, surely they're going to want to make a huge profit.
Yep. I mean, you know, they said they weren't going to bid for the club as well. I think, back in 2004-05, that was, a statement that was made a number of times, as I remember. But, you know, they are business people and they see Manchester United as a business. And any business is always up for sale. You know, it's just a matter of what's the appropriate price. And I think what they will do is balance up. If there's an offer put on the table and it gives them a profit, they have to balance that up against what's the likelihood of getting a better profit in future, or what's the likelihood that they might actually lose money in future. And there are a number of major threats on the horizon to the revenue streams, particularly obviously Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, there's going to be a time, you know, which can't be that far away, you'd imagine anyway, that he's going to decide, he's going to retire from managing the club. And that's going to require really major investment. There are challenges in terms of, could there be difficulties with the UEFA licence system and having a lot of debt on the club that mean you can't play in the Champions League? There are challenges because we've got competition for the four places that qualify for the Champions League now. There was a kind of cosy arrangement up until a year or so ago where there really were only four teams that realistically were challenging for those places. So you didn't necessarily have to invest a huge amount in the squad in order to retain that place. But if you drop out of the Champions League qualification, you know, that's a really major problem for a club with debt like United, and obviously Liverpool are in a similar situation. And now we've got Manchester City challenging, and obviously Spurs and Villa are looking pretty strong as well. So I think there's real competition for those places. So these are all things that are, you know, additional uncertainty. And I think there's also an interest in the UK in terms of the government looking at football and debt and talking about potential intervention and regulation. So there's an uncertainty about the future, and there's a potential offer on the table that will give you a profit. And I think that's just a matter of a business person making a business decision and deciding, is it time to take the money and run? And yeah, you can always throw into that equation as well, well, are the supporters going to have a big influence in that? And obviously the more supporters that are kind of in that network, and obviously the more of those who are, you know, key players in terms of having executive facilities or season tickets, the more pressure there would be for them to take the money and go.
I've noticed that you've mentioned that appealing to season ticket holders and those with executive facilities at Old Trafford, that's going to be paramount. I mean, any idea of the response you've had so far from these particular supporters?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I mean, I've seen some figures that I think it's on the recent growth that there was 5,000 season ticket holders and 2,000 with exec facilities. I mean, I don't know exactly on those, the accuracy of those figures, because at the moment, what you're talking about is people volunteering information, and obviously those things have to be properly corroborated. You know, anyone can tick something on a poll, if you like, in effect, can't they? But you know, we'll be hardening up those figures to make sure that we understand exactly who people are and what facilities they have, and that gives us an indication. I mean, in particular, we do want to really grow this kind of season ticket holders network, because I think that's useful whatever happens, whether, you know, even if there wasn't a takeover or, you know, any kind of Red Knight bid, there's all sorts of different ways that kind of network could be useful to people. Even from a social point of view, people love the idea of, you know, connecting with other United supporters in your own section, in your own block. And so we want to organise all those sort of things so that, you know, adding a kind of a social element to this this growth, so that, you know, the socialising between supporters is an important thing as well.
Just finally, Duncan, I mean, when and how do you think you can get the support from the likes of David Gill and Sir Alex Ferguson? Obviously, Gill came out today and he pretty much attacked, didn't he, the talk of a takeover. But how would you react to his comments? And then going forward, how do you think you can get him on your side?
Sure. I mean, I think obviously everyone understands that, you know, you're an employee of the owners, and clearly you have to stick to the party line, and nobody would expect anything different. I think, you know, that may be different if there's a, you know, a credible offer put on the table, and obviously if the Glazers are interested in picking that up. And I think you have to remember, well, what was David Gill's position prior to 2005? And he was very much against the debt and against the kind of proposal that was being put forward by the Glazers. Obviously, post the takeover, you know, he made his decision, as did Sir Alex and other people. And, you know, once they decided they were going to stay, then that was their, you know, they were employees of the new owners. And obviously, if they're going to stay, remain as employees of the new owners, then they have to, you know, act accordingly. So I don't think there's anything, you know, particularly unexpected in the comments that David Gill made. You know, but I don't think that's, you know, at all a negative thing in terms of the chances of any Red Knight proposal going forward.
Great stuff. And just to add, for any sort of members or listeners who haven't already and would like to get involved, do head over to joinmust.org and put your name forward for the cause. Well, thanks a lot for joining us on the podcast tonight, Duncan, and a massive good luck from all of us at the redcafe.net podcast going forward.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, it's player and cabbage of the week time now then. And first of all, I'll ask Dov, who's your player of the week?
It would be Mr. Wayne Rooney for scoring the winning goal to help us win the first trophy of the season, and may it not be the last. Simple and effective. I like it.
Great stuff. Dan?
I'm going to go with Berbatov. It was either that or Jisung Park. I thought they both had terrific games. Most players played well on Sunday, but I think Berbatov just... I thought he showed a little bit of determination and a bit more focus. He mentally wanted it, so I'm going to go with Berbatov. About you, Steve?
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Dan. Actually saw him, mate, not one, not two, but I think actually three tackles in the game. So it's amazing to see. And yeah, I think it was his best performance so far in a United shirt, so long may.
Maybe it was that soft pitch that he didn't mind sliding on.
They didn't do that in the highlights, that's all I'm saying.
Did they not, alright.
And what about cabbage of the week then? Dolph, surely not Berbatov.
I can't really think of a cabbage, to be honest. I mean, we won a trophy, I can't ask for any more than that. I don't know, Dan, help me out. Give me a cabbage.
I'm definitely going to go with Michael Carrick. I thought he had a poor game, but I mean, he was always on the ball, I suppose, you know, so he was going to make a few more mistakes. He was always trying to play the ball nicely, as he always does, but I mean, I just think there was a few misplaced passes, and he was out of position a few times, but that's just being harsh. I thought everyone played well. I just thought that he just had a little bit of an off day, but, you know, he's still a quality player.
Can we go for Vidic for giving away the penalty, possibly getting himself sent off? Like, which, well, apparently it should have been according to Martin O'Neill, and like, from what I see, it had a few fouls, shall we say.
Yeah. Oh, it was a definite red card offence. There's no way he should have stayed on. He didn't even get booked though, which was pretty amazing. But yeah.
I'm going to give it to Vidic then for running the line of a red card in a final. So there you go.
I'm with you on that one, Dolph. I completely agree. I think he was very fortunate not to get sent off. And I mean, he did all right after that. He was pretty solid, but then he should have gone, really, and it was a clumsy tackle. So for that reason, I'm going to give it to Vidic. And Dov, your return, does that mark a return for reserves review as well?
Yes, it does. I see Mr. Lomax, he took over from me last week. He did a fine job, Dan. Congratulations.
It's all right, thanks. What are you spouting my last name off for? You know, I'm an undercover spy. You know, everyone knows my name now.
Well, Dan, that's your spy name, so they don't really know your name.
Right, if I get hate mail now. Go on, crack on with your reserves review.
Anyway, reserves review, it was Manchester United against Blackburn Rovers away in the Barclays Premier Reserve League. It was a 1-1 draw, and Richard Delight got the goal for United. Andy Hoylett got the goal for Blackburn Rovers. The game started out to and fro, both sides having chances. Oliver Norwood had a good chance, swapped a couple of passes with Albert Sand before he fired over a crossbar. Ben Amos produced a great save from David Dunn, who had a powerful strike from just outside the box, and Ben Amos produced a magnificent reaction save. However, it could not prevent Blackburn Rovers taking the lead on 17 minutes. Basically, they came forward with the ball, and Hullett found room and directed a near post sort of corner shot towards the goal. And Amos couldn't get into it. Cameron Short also, he was unable to prevent the ball from crossing the line, tried to get off as well. At this point, Blackburn Rovers were really bossing the midfield. Stephen Reid had a couple of chances, nearly doubled the lead with a thunderous drive. She just clipped outside of the post. And then Duff had a magnificent shot with his left foot, which stung the palms of Blackburn keeper, I believe it was Jason Brown was his name. Although United did equalise just minutes before the half-time ever. Duff basically kept the corner alive, got the ball on the right flank, fired in a direct cross, which delay produced a magnificent volley for United to make it 1-1. Obviously, like I say, United were on the back, but Blackburn controlled most of the game. And then after the second half, United sort of came out a bit more positive, shall we say. Had a couple of efforts on goal. Although Blackburn did make Amos produce another magnificent save. Hoylett, who was having a magnificent game, jigged between a couple of defenders and powered a shot into the box, the near post. But Amos turned it amazingly up into the crossbar, sorry, a fantastic save. Going on to the rest of the game as well. So Blackburn again, as the game wore on, they were sort of winning the midfield battle. And so Stephen Reid was fantastic. Going on towards the end of the game, though, Oliver Norwood here across, which bounced off Reid, incidentally, and went to where fell to William Keane. But he could only hit the ball against the post. So Blackburn probably overall the better side. And this was incidentally the first reserve draw of the season. We are now 5 points clear of second place Manchester City, with Liverpool 6 points behind, but with 3 games in hand. So could well be United go on to win the reserve league, but who knows? But I like to say, possibly a bit lucky to come away with a draw, but every point is precious, shall we say.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, everybody, it's that time of the show where we chat to an opposition fan, and with Wolves coming up at the weekend, we have Ben Smallman of thewolvesblog.com. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. You just caught me as England have scored. We're 3-1 up now, so yeah, everything's good at the moment. Looking forward to the game on Saturday. And my mate's told me to take an abacus down there so I can keep track of the score, but I'm a bit more confident than that, so should be good.
Excellent stuff. I mean, mentioning England, I've got the two co-hosts there who are England fans as well. I mean, it's not stuff I really want to hear. Let's just...
No, sorry about that, man. Not a good start, is it? But yeah, there you are.
Yeah, we'll crack on. We'll talk about more important matters. The weekend, Manchester United against Wolves. We'll start on, we'll put it into from things that happened previously. In December, Wolves deliberately fielded a weakened side against ourselves, and you recently got fined for it. Can I first get your take on what happened in December and whether you feel that the fine is fair or not?
Well, I'm bound to say, and with my golden black tinted spectacles on, I thought it was, I couldn't get my head around the decision, really. I just think we've got a squad for precisely that reason, because you've got, perhaps was it 3 games in 7 days, we had something like that, and we just had a tough game at Spurs, and we got a lot of players who had first team experience, I think all bar one of them, so... When they got pinged with a fine, I think on the surface you think, there's a weakened team, 10 changes. But if you ask Neil Warnock what he thinks of Rafa Benitez, I think it'll tell you where to go, because I think Liverpool did it away at Fulham, which almost directly cost Sheffield United their Premier League status, because they just surrendered the game because they had a bigger Champions League game. And that was the same season that I think West Ham didn't get the book thrown at them for illegally buying Carlos Tevez. So you do start to think, what all the emotions are in place. So if you wanted to know my answer, I suppose it would be no. I didn't think it was fair at all, but you just got to get on with it. It seemed that perhaps, I know you boys did it away at Hull, I think, back in the last game of last season, but the difference is you've got a squad that's good enough to, to get the result come May, whereas I think we haven't got that. So didn't think it was fair, but just got to roll your sleeves up and just take it on the chin, I suppose.
Yeah, well, we would never do a thing like that. We fielded the best team possible, that's all I can say.
it's so frustrating when I do find that it's set a precedent, really. So I think, an interesting question would be like, what happens when it happens again? Cause it inevitably will, then Champions League being the be all end all for obviously a lot of clubs. It'll be, I'm sure, the situation online again. So the Premier League are basically, they set a precedent. So I'll just be interested to see if they, uphold this kind of decision to other clubs. We'll wait and see.
I think you and me both know that's not going to happen. Going back to the actual league as well, I mean, you yourselves are sitting just above the relegation zone, and you haven't actually won a game since the FA Cup match against Tranmere all the way back on the 3rd of January. What are your thoughts on your current form, and do you think you've got a real possibility of actually going down?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you got the, we beat Spurs in a midweek game not so long ago, so that was, I think it was something like 1-1, about 8-9 or something like that, so yeah, we're still living off that Spurs result when we beat them 1-0, so yeah, you're right, I mean, the possibility, it is extremely real one that we might well get relegated, so it's something I think we'll go down to the end of the season, but we're just trying to make the best of what we've got, really. I just feel like, we've perhaps missed a bit of an opportunity this season because it's such a poor league. I mean, you guys, Man United fans can probably answer this one better than I could, but it seems that the Premier League isn't quite as strong, quality-wise than it's been in previous years. And I think we've been in the large, we work hard, we battle hard, you can't question our endeavour, but the bottom line is we're not getting enough results, like you're saying, we're not winning enough games. But for the fact there's three teams that are, also having a tough time with it, we're always just about outside that relegation zone, so it is a worry, and I think it probably will get down to the last game of the season. But if you want an answer to when I think we'll stay up, I honestly couldn't say, but it's going to be an interesting one, that's for sure.
Definitely, indeed. Going into some of your players then, I mean, who would you feel that are your most sort of dangerous players, attacking-wise, that we should now be worried about come the weekend?
From our point of view, Kevin Doyle's been easily our best player of the season. He's the one player that we've actually coughed up big money for. From our point of view, I think 6.5 million record signing, and he's worth double that now. He's phenomenally good for us, and it just shows you the gap that there is between the Premier League and the Championship, because players like Silver Ebanks, Blake, an ex-Man United player, banging in the goals for fun last season, the step up really is big. But Doyle, he's a class act. And he's the one and only one, really. Jody Craddock's having a bit of an Indian summer. He's having a really good season for us at centre-back. I didn't think I'd be saying that at the start of the season. And Carl Henry, a local lad just down the road, picked him up for about 100 grand from Stoke about 3 years ago, and he's holding that midfield together. So, yeah, all in all, I'd say Kevin Doyle already, but we've got a lot of tryers, but he's the one that has actually got a lot of Premier League quality about him.
Talking about United players, here's a question for you. If you could have one player from Manchester United, money is no object, who would your player be? Who would you choose?
Well, I thought there was there's one condition. I'm not allowed to say Rooney because it's too easy to say. So obviously I'd say Rooney, but if I'm not allowed to say him, I've given this some thought. I like Evra at left back. I think he's a class act. He's got an abundance of energy. We haven't got a left back. We haven't got a decent left back. We've got a striker playing out at the moment in Stephen Ward. As a result, we've got no balance, and we've always opened up down our left-hand side. So to have a proper world-class left back would be fantastic for us. So I'd go for him, really, but there's so many other candidates. I mean, I love Fletcher, guys that can just get box-to-box. And then we've got phenomenal engines on them. I think there's so many underrated players at United that people don't think to mention. There's just dozens of them. But yeah, Evra for me is a left back, obviously, if I'm not allowed to say Rooney. So.
There you go. Well, Evra is a top-notch player. And then at the weekend's game, how are Wolves, do you think they'll line up? And how do you think they'll sort of approach the game against United?
With caution, I think. I mean, we've gone from... last season, when we just blazed a trail through the Championship, we were 4-4-2, make no bones about what we were. We had a big man up front, we had two wingers. And a combination of reasons meant we've not really been able to play that strong team because Michael Kiley's been injured. And when you do play 4-4-2 in this league, you just get punished because you're so open. So Mick's gone and he's gone for the 4-5-1 option, so that's what we'll play. We'll play five across the middle. The pitch is quite narrow at the Molyneux, so we'll try and keep it tight. And we'll hope to keep United out for the first 20 minutes, half an hour, and just take it from there. We've had a good result against Spurs when we beat them 1-0, drew at home to Liverpool 0-0, and it's all about that first 20 minutes for us. We do look like we could concede early doors. We've got a bit of a tendency to do that, so it'll be 4-5-1. We've got a new Belgian lad, Guardiola, who I can barely pronounce, but he's coming in looking really good. And we'll just stuff up the midfield. We'll try and strangle the life out of the game. It'll be horrible to watch, and I'm hoping we might just nick something from it. So that's my prediction for the game anyway.
So can I get a score prediction? I want some numbers.
Well, I'm not allowed to say, you know, I can't. I've got to say something. I'll get caned if I start saying United are going to smash this, even though that is a strong possibility. I'd say maybe 1-1. I mean, if we can keep it, if we keep the game quiet for maybe an hour or so, then you've always got a chance. And I'm hoping, I'm really hoping that we're talking about weakened teams beforehand. I know it's all relative with Man United, but I know you've got Milan in the week. So if you could perhaps rest one or two players, that'd help us out a big time. So
I'm sure we'll see what we can do. But Ben, fantastic.
I've just seen Rooney get injured on the halfway line for England, so he's clutching his ankle, so let's hope that works for us.
I don't see things like that.
I'm only joking, but I know.
Excellent stuff, Robert. It's been a pleasure having you on the RedCafe.net podcast.
Yeah, lovely. Well, thanks for having me, and well, all the best. May the best team win on Saturday, and fingers crossed we'll play you boys again next season.
Excellent stuff. Well, Ben, thanks again, and we shall speak to you hopefully next season.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks a lot.
Well, that was the views of Ben Smallman, our opposition fan for this week. Dan, how do you see it going? Wolves, 17th in the league, 1-9. Should be relatively easy picking, shouldn't it?
It should be, but I saw the Wolves game against Chelsea a few weeks ago, and Chelsea struggled to beat them, really. Wolves played really well. They were just a bit toothless up front. And obviously, Chelsea had a bit more power and beat them. I think it was 2-0. I think Drogba scored both their goals. I think, obviously, we've got the quality to beat them. But it, you know, it depends how players come back from internationals and stuff, whether anyone's picked any knocks up, whether they're tired. But I mean, I would expect us to get all 3 points there, especially with us chasing down the league title.
Prediction, score prediction, Dov, start with you.
I think we'll win, and I think we'll win reasonably comfortably as well. I mean, like Ben said about we've got the Milan game coming up, so you would think he would make rest a couple of players, but I can see him putting a reasonably full strength team at giving the score in the first leg in Milan. So I think it'll be, maybe I will go for a 2-3-0. I don't think we'll concede. So yeah, I think it'll be a reasonably comfortable victory.
Dan, similar sort of prediction for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're the best players or not. I mean, personally, I'd rather us play a full-strength team against Wolves, because I think that the league title is a little bit more important than the Champions League at the moment. I think that means a lot to Ferguson. We've obviously, you know, dropped some points lately in the league as well, so I think we need to start, you know, pushing on really, especially after that Everton game. I know we beat West Ham, but I think we need to get a string of results together now. And I think it'd be a bit foolish to leave key players out. Maybe players like Gibson will get a run out in midfield, because I don't think he'll start against Milan. But I hope we play a fairly full strength team, yeah.
Do you think Wolves will play another depleted side, or do you think they'll learn from the and they're fine?
Well, they can't, can they? I mean, it's only a suspended fine, isn't it? So if they do, then they'll get the fine. But I think it's harsh on Wolves. I mean, going off what Ben said, you know, I think it's very harsh. I mean, United rest players all the time, don't they? Aren't first teamers. So if you go by one rule, then you've got to say that the top teams, you know, before Champions League games, they rest players. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens really in the future regarding that. Because essentially, you know, the Wolves players in that squad, they're all signed on players. They're all obviously good enough. So why can't they play? I don't understand why it's a problem.
Well, that is just about it for this week on the RedCafe.net podcast. Thanks a lot for listening, and do make sure you sign up to our Facebook group if you haven't done that already, and you can email us at podcast@redcafe.net too. Just need us to say thanks again for listening, and we'll see you all next week.